studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
And good Wednesday morning. This is a growing KRBN Radio as our roundtable staff is growing, not just my belly, by the way, with
a big round table.
Big round table with myself.
Covers several communities here.
I'll let the panel introduce himself. My name is Robin.
Okay, I'll be next. My name is Cliff, and I'm in another city.
And this is Cindy Wheeldryer, and I'm on Wheeldryer Hill.
And this is Bradley Shepherd, and I'm on a hill, too.
And I'm in a valley.
Anyway, well, good morning, everyone.
Hi, how are you? I haven't seen you for a whole week. Actually, nope. I haven't seen you for a couple
for
weeks.
Two whole weeks.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right.
So the KRBN Radio family is ever growing, but we are still live from the main studios in downtown Eugene, Oregon.
That's actually where it all culminates together. We all thrust our signal into her
computer and okay. Not even going to go there. Anyways, welcome to the show, 646-721-9887, if you'd like to join us. If you've never called a talk show before, this is a good way to find out what it's like, and be warned, it is habit-forming.
What's that number again, Robin?
That number again is 646-721-9887. You can call collect, but we won't accept it.
I wonder where that number is. I think we went through that once before.
I think we did. The chat room is open, www.blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. They did make some changes on the Blog Talk Radio main page, so you'll have to go to the where it says live on the air right now. Click on that. It'll come up to the show page that we're doing right now, and you'll see the chat room. So there's a few changes made, but...
And sign in, because it doesn't cost anything to sign in, and then you can talk to us in the chat room.
Absolutely. You can also reach us. You can also reach us at talk@krbnradio.com. We love emails, and follow us on Twitter, which we have gotten a couple more followers, and on Facebook. So we're all over the place, and even on iTunes, by the way.
But the important part is use the phone number, because we'd like to talk to you in real live person with voices and everything. 646-721-9887. 646-721-9887. Write it down.
And now, since that conversation that the two of you had over our phone number, I had to look it up, and it is coming from the Big Apple.
Oh, it is?
Of New York City. That's one of their area codes.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no
the wonder of technology.
And nowadays, with the advent of cell phones and everybody has unlimited cell phone service, it doesn't make any difference because it doesn't cost anything to call anywhere anyway, so you may as well.
True story. Call, please call.
It's not that we're begging, but we're begging. Anyways, we got a lot to talk about today, and the main topic is nuclear power, and we'll get to that right after a few other businesses that we have to do. And does anybody have any topics, or shall I get into the what the heck?
I'll just give a quick weather report here from Wheeldryer Hill. That after a steady rain overnight and some scattered showers this morning, it is chilly and damp up here, 42 degrees, and we're only going to get to 50 degrees today. Welcome to spring in Oregon.
They keep saying that, but yesterday it got nice and warm and nice. It was sunshiny and everything. You were surprised.
Sorry, given the weatherman is wrong in your favor.
Well, he's wrong in our favor a lot. We live in kind of a banana belt here. Everybody around us has weather, and we don't. Or bad weather. Worse weather.
No, we just got two seasons. We got winter and construction.
Really?
But according to my allergies, yes, spring is coming.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I researched this area very well when I came here 10 years ago, 12 years ago, something like that. I looked it up on the internet and checked the weather for people, and the rainfall is supposed to be 39 inches a year here, 37 to 39 inches a year here. I moved here, and we had like 14 inches of rain the first year and 12 inches of rain the next year, and until now, we're getting close to our 39 inches. So we're actually just now getting back to normal, believe it or not.
Well, if you like all that rain, fine. I'm moving to Arizona.
Not going to comment because I, under no circumstances, I almost move anywhere except Arizona.
Well, I have no comment on Arizona, except I've driven through there. Seen the Grand Canyon, said hi, bye.
Well, I lived next door to it for 4 or 5 years in Needles, California. And Needles, California is the hottest place on earth, and it's still better than Arizona. Not because of the heat, but because I think the heat does something to the people in Arizona, because they all lose their mind.
Well, and I know Needles, California is the home of Peanuts, Snoopy's brother.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I lived there and didn't know that. All I know is that when I first moved there, I can remember, because having been in radio for most of my life, I'd always give the weather, and the hottest place in the United States was always Needles, California. Until when I moved there, one of the first things the Chamber of Commerce and the city did was to, what do you want to call it, decommission the airport so that it was no longer reporting station, so that the weather didn't come from Needles, California. It came from somewhere else, and people didn't have to know that it was Needles, California that was the hottest place all the time. But right after I moved there, I recall that vividly, because it was quite a big deal.
Wow.
Hey, one thing that I was going to throw out there, and this is kind of a national news item, with the government surviving the shutdown barely, apparently, one of the suggestions is to raise the debt ceiling.
That's still coming up.
Still coming up, right. And from what I understand, it's just like raising the credit limit on your credit card. What do you guys think about that?
Well, of course, that's one of the things I want to get into in another show, because they're still going to do that. That's still on the one... $1.7 billion is what they're raising it by, and that's absolutely not. It's an absolute no-no. It's an absolute positive no-no, because you're just going to spend it, and you can't do that. We've got to stop spending. We can't just raise the limits and continue on the way we are, because the country is going to tip over. That's what it's going to do. It's going to just implode. You can't keep printing paper dollars.
No, and I've noticed that some of the cuts that they did make, it's just like locally here in Lane County, that they make the cuts that affect the individuals directly. You know, like here we cut fire, police, basic services, to have a direct impact. So we, the taxpayers, feel their pain and want to give them more of our money that we don't have.
Of course, the thing that's going on right now, that what we were doing right now is just this temporary thing for the rest of the year, because the Democrats haven't passed a budget for 2 years. And so consequently, they have to keep going on these continuing resolutions. And that's what we passed, was one of those. And it's not going to be for much. It's only for a couple more weeks, and then we got to finally actually do one. We just did a temporary passing of the temporary bill, so we're getting into stupidness here very fast. But the whole thing is going to end, because for the 2012 budget, we've got to address this $1.7 trillion increase that Obama wants to do. I just heard a thing. Okay.
I ignore the thing.
Okay.
Anyway, 646-721-9887. If you'd like to chime in on this, we have some people in the brat room. Brat room? Bradley.
The brat room.
There was a point.
Yeah. No, we had a guest in there before Bradley signed in there. But and people listening on the phone. So again, welcome, 646-721-9887.
Yeah.
And I want to get into our topic today is nuclear power, and I want to get into the what the heck is the thinking segment. It's going to be one of those days, and then we'll get into our main topic.
You have got to be kidding me.
What the heck were they thinking?
Can you actually believe they did that?
It's Robin's What the Heck Are They Thinking Award, where Robin picks out some of the dumbest and most ridiculous headlines of the week. And now, with this week's picks, here's Robin.
Okay, and I got three items for the What the Heck Are They Thinking Award today, assuming my tongue will keep working. The first one comes from, the Chicago area, and this is from the Chicago Tribune.
Oh, you can figure they're going to have something weird.
Absolutely. And as you all know, the food police is trying their best to gain control of what you can eat, what you can't eat, et cetera. Well, this is happening in Chicago's West Side public school district known as the Little Village Academy, which, to encourage students to eat healthy, has banned parents from packing their lunches, the children's lunches, to school. So the only way that the kids can eat is that they have to buy the food from the food cafeteria. Otherwise, everything else is a no-no.
So the people who are taking lunch because they couldn't afford to buy the food are now just going to starve.
Exactly.
And that's much better than eating bad food, of course, you understand.
Correct. However, the policy was started by Principal Eliza Carmella, who said that her intention is to protect students from their own unhealthy food choices as their parents might make for their children. She decided to create the policy 6 years ago after watching students bring bottles of soda and flaming hot chips on their field trips for lunch.
I'm getting so tired of being protected from myself.
Oh, me too.
Another school district, Principal Rebecca Stinson of the Claremont Academy Elementary School in on the South Side said that many kids have found money or earned money to buy junk food without the knowledge of their parents.
So what? Like, when I went to school, they turned us loose at lunchtime, and we went to the local restaurant or the local store and bought junk food. I mean, there was no problem.
Me too. In fact, I remember when gas was 25 cents and candy was a penny on lunchtime. For a buck, you could buy a heck of a lot of candy.
Yeah, but you also didn't have as much bucks.
Well, yeah.
I don't know about you. Maybe you were rich.
Well, the dollar went a little further back then, too. But,
significantly, yes.
And
it's harder to get your hands on a dollar.
Well, I did paper route, so I had money. And under the political correct segment, with Easter coming up, the term Easter eggs is now considered impolitically correct in a school in Seattle, at least according to a caller to KIR Radio. When a student named Jessica wanted to fill little plastic eggs with treats and jelly beans, along with other candy, but checked with the teacher first to get permission to do so. The teacher, being unsure, checked with the administration to see if it was okay and explained that Jessica could provide the eggs to her fellow classmates as long as they were referred to as spring spears.
Okay, that was good.
This is getting absolutely ridiculous because it can't have anything religious. Easter eggs come from rabbits, and if that's religious, we're in trouble.
I didn't know that rabbits laid eggs, but
of course they do, Easter eggs.
Every year, Easter eggs. We all know the Easter bunny.
Yeah.
Right.
That's where
right.
The eggs come from, it's rabbits. So, you know, that hasn't got anything to do with God.
Yeah.
Rabbits don't come from God. You know that.
Okay, moving on.
We won't go there.
We won't go there.
Okay. And a new trend in fashion is starting to take hold. As you know that, television, movies, games, and whatever have had a major influence in some of their, or at least our kids' fashion choices.
You think?
And it's... Somehow, sometimes they affect our ideas and our outlooks. However, there's a new trend among kids these days known as cosmetic surgery. Now, this isn't like getting your nose bopped or boob job or that type of thing. This is, for a mere $600 and 20 minutes of your time, You too can have elf-like ears and look like Mr. Spock, are one of your favorite characters from Lords of the Rings.
Okay.
That's great. I want some. That's absolutely fantastic. That's, gee, everybody's trying to be a Star Trek.
That's right. The procedure is irreversible in itself and could cause damage to the cartilage in the upper ear.
It can't be irreversible. If you can put it on, you can chop it off.
Well, you can chop off the ear, but, I mean, as far as getting it back to cosmetically looking at like before you started, they said that whenever you're dealing with a cartilage in an ear, it's a risky procedure and very hard to get it back to.
Have you looked at somebody who's had facelift recently? They can't get that back either. Some of them are really ridiculous.
Catwoman.
Yeah, really. I mean, people are getting carried away with this.
Sorry, Miss Rivers.
Yeah. Well, she's one of them. If I ever watch her try to laugh, God.
Am I smiling? I don't know if I'm smiling.
It's painful. And she knows it.
Yes.
She admits it, unfortunately. And unfortunately, like you say, it's irreversible. It's too late.
Yeah.
I just, man. I'll sit here and be ugly instead.
Anyway, 646-721-9887. Join us in the chat room if you'd like to. But, of course, we'd like you to call and push the little one on the telephone. A little hand comes up on my board, and I say, welcome to the show, area code so-and-so. So, anyways, our main topic today is nuclear power.
And you need to call and let us know. What do you think? What do you think we should have? Should we call a halt to nuclear power? For years and years and years, I felt that we should be building more nuclear power plants. I was not aware. I was aware that we have 104 nuclear power plants in this country. I was not aware we were the largest supplier of nuclear power in the world. But we are, with our 104 power plants. But I think we're at the end. I mean, after this big, well, it isn't really a meltdown yet, but it's close enough to it that everybody's afraid of it. But in Japan, what do you think? Should we build more nuclear power plants or shouldn't we? And if we should, why? If we shouldn't, why? 721-9887. 9887. Because I'd really like to know what somebody thinks about this. There are. Am I getting jumping ahead too far here or not?
No, you're fine.
The reason I was going to go into this, there are 20 new nuclear power plants that are ready to be built. There are two companies that are actually have literally started. They've hired some people. They've put in the requests for, what do you want to call it?
The regulation you have to go through, jump through all kinds of application hoops.
Oh, just tremendous amounts of stuff.
A huge bureaucracy.
They have two of them that were actually being started in Texas, and they've stopped. They've stopped doing anything with them. And I think we're probably going to end up abandoning all nuclear power projects in the future because of this problem. People are afraid of nuclear radiation and nuclear waste. I went online and I did some research about different things, and there is a what do I want to call it? There's a I don't know if it's a company or a person or somebody who feels that there is a system that is available called fusion. And I'm not sure. I don't think this is what we were talking about some time ago about cold fusion. This is just fusion, and it uses a different type of system, and it's much more efficient and does not produce actual radioactive material when it's as the end of it. It's tritium. I've never heard of these different materials before, but it's called heavy ion fusion, and it's the ultimate solution. They're considering the holy grail of clean energy, and so they're calling this fusion power clean energy. According to this website, 1/10 of 1 gram. Get that now. 1/10 of 1 gram releases the equivalent energy of 2 barrels of oil. Now, that's high efficiency.
And yeah.
produces no carbon dioxide, does not generate high-level radioactive waste materials. It can produce gigabytes of base load energy at a cost that's below that of coal. And there's nearly a limited supply, a limitless rather supply of deuterium, D-U-E-T-E-R-I-U-M fuel. It's available in the world's water. It's in just available in the water, and it's free. Of course, it's in the water. Now, you have to have this tritium fuel, which is made from man-made sources, to get it started. And after that, you can produce the deuterium from the tritium itself. So basically, there's not a lot of information. I mean, here's my thinking about this whole thing, and I'd love to hear about somebody. And if you know anything about this, call us and let us know, because I
jump
really
in there, folks.
What?
I was saying for them to jump in at any time.
Absolutely, at any time, because I've only found this one place on the internet where they've talked about it. They don't get into really basic details, just much more than I've told you. But my feeling is, if this is available, and if it's as cheap as it is, why aren't they doing it? I would think that
you're talking about cold fusion or nuclear.
Well, I don't know if this is fusion. Heavy ion fusion, I don't know if it's the same as cold fusion or not. But I know we've talked about cold fusion for, 25 years and haven't been able to do it. It's just something that hasn't been possible so far. And I don't know if that's this or not, but I don't think so. But if this can be done, someone would be doing it because there's money in it. And that's one thing that human beings are, is greedy. And if somebody can make some money with this system, they'd be doing it. I don't care what you say. I mean, you can't just keep a good program down if it's actually literally there. So I'd like to know if anybody knows anything about that and has heard anything about that. On the internet, by the way, it's at www.fusionpowercorporation.com /1_9. Well, just go to fusioncorporation.com. You'll get there. And it's on there. You can look it up, and it's easy to find and read about it. Basically, it's very limited in what it actually tells you. It tells you all kinds of great ideas and that it's so good and such a great system, but it doesn't really tell you how to do it. And, of course, I can understand that they wouldn't do that either, because you don't want to – if it's something that actually can be done, you don't want to just tell everybody about it and let everybody else do it instead of you. But nobody's doing it, so – I think there's something wrong with the thought. Anyway, that's one of the ideas. The problem is, I believe we're going to lose all nuclear power. We're going to shut down several plants, nuclear power plants in the United States, because of the fact that they're on fault lines or on the edge of the ocean or something. There's not very many. I did go to maps to look and see how many were where and when, and I didn't get a very good count, unfortunately.
Well, the other thing to consider, too, the thing with nuclear power or nuclear power plants is its cooling, because a nuclear power plant uses a lot of water. And that water, that's why they have those huge cooling towers, is because that water gets hot. And so they have to cool it down enough to be able to put it back into the stream or river that they're getting it from. And so you got the possibility of raising the ambient temperature in the water, not to mention the amount of steam that you're placing into the air, so the effects of global warming may be an issue.
Yeah, we'll get into that later.
Well, I, being a history lover, wanted to share with you and with our listeners on, I want to take you on a time travel trip in our imagination to the very moment that set America's nuclear energy industry off the ground, got it off the ground. And it was on September 6, 1954, picture this, President Dwight D. Eisenhower, while vacationing in Denver, which was at that time the summer White House, he passed a pole with a gleaming tip over an entire cabinet full of electronic equipment and this quote-unquote neutron wand supposedly sent a signal that was then conveyed to an unmanned power shovel that was 1,200 miles away in Shippingport, Pennsylvania. And the shovel then lurched forward, scooped up 3 tons of dirt, and that is what broke ground for America's very first commercial nuclear power plant. And this is what President Eisenhower said at the time. And mind you, this is right as we're coming out of World War II, where we used nuclear power to destroy those cities in Japan. Kind of a full circle for me. My friend, through such measures as these and through knowledge we are sure to gain from this new plant we begin today, I'm confident that the atom will not be devoted exclusively to the destruction of man, but will be his mighty servant and tireless benefactor, the president said. And in the years following that, the Eisenhower administration did just about everything it could do to promote nuclear energy. And in 1955, the president went so far as to propose that the United States build a reactor-powered ship to cruise around the world and act as a floating PR campaign for nuclear energy. But it never got commissioned because it was like a bazillion-dollar project and it cost too much to operate. So that never happened. But I just thought that was interesting about how ceremonially we created this, our first nuclear power plant, on the heels of a Japanese disaster that was the end of the Pacific Theater in World War II. And now here we are all these years later, and Japan's dealing with another disaster that the same atom is causing now, but in a different way. So I thought I'd add that to the conversation this morning from a historical perspective.
Well, and speaking of historical, if I could throw this out, March 28th, 1979 was the Three Mile Island disaster, which happened just, and coincidentally, 12 days after the release of the film The China Syndrome.
That was weird. I remember that.
It's interesting you call it the Three Mile Island disaster. No one got hurt. So why was it a disaster?
Well, it doesn't have to have, somebody doesn't have to get hurt to be a disaster.
Okay. It
was a disaster for the company that ran the plant. A financial disaster. But Chernobyl, of course, was truly a disaster.
That's the only place where anybody has actually been killed from radioactivity or a nuclear power plant, let's put it that way. People have been killed by radioactivity because we wiped out a couple cities that way.
Mm-hmm. And if this was to happen nowadays, we would probably change the name of it to make it more warm and fuzzy.
Well, that's possible, too.
Well, you know, here's another irony. Just a month before the Japanese earthquake and tsunami, President Barack Obama advocated building this, what Cliff's been talking about, a new generation of safe, clean nuclear power plants. And he called for $36 billion in federal loan guarantees to create these new reactors.
And they actually have, I don't know if they've actually gotten any of that money or not, but like I say, there are 20 nuclear reactors that were on the books, so to speak, but that different companies have plans to build. Two of them have actually broken ground and actually started in Texas and are now basically being closed up, I think. I don't know how for sure if they're going to be, because the decisions haven't actually been made. We're still in the process of making all these decisions because we still don't know exactly what has happened in Japan. We don't know exactly, you know, who's...
Well, it's still unfolding.
Everybody's worried about who's telling the truth and who isn't. And we, like you say, it's all still unfolding, and we just don't know what's going on. But I'm quite sure that what's going to happen is we're not going to get another nuclear power plant in the United States. I know the president's all for it. A lot of people are all for it, GE especially, because they've got lots of money invested in it. But I just don't think it's going to happen. What we've got to do is people keep saying, well, what's the alternative? I mean, I don't think natural gas is it. Natural gas is what's being touted as the alternative to carbon-based crude oil. And that can be an alternative if we start mining the natural gas as much as we talk about doing that. It's going to raise the price of it too, but still, it's going to be less than crude oil.
Well, we're seeing the brilliant idea of turning corn into fuel, and what that's doing now to commodity prices for food for cattle as well as for our own consumption.
I think we've discovered and realized that corn is not the answer. We've got we've got all kinds of things. I want to get in on a program and talk about algae because that's, in my opinion, going to be the next answer to it. But I've got a couple of people I need to get a hold of and talk to. Algae is the only significant answer because you can actually use algae to produce a non-carbon based crude oil. And the big problem with every other kind, producing ethanol is not an answer because you can't make plastics and all kinds of other things out of ethanol. But you can out of this algae-based crude oil that you start with the algae and end up with a crude oil, and then you can refine that to whatever you want. Same as a regular crude oil could be done, only it's non-carbon-based and renewable. Because the algae has like 6 harvests a year or something like that. It's quite fast growing and cheap, and it's available everywhere, and it's indigenous everywhere. And you could build your distributorship or your plant, and you could spill all of it out into the ocean or out into the water or out into the land, out into anywhere, and it would do no damage because it's just
what would it do to the mosquitoes?
Probably kill them. Probably be too much on them. They'd die of heart attack.
Go ahead, Robin.
Well, I was just going to say, mention one more thing about nuclear power, that reading up a little bit too, how nuclear power is not a free ride because it also, you have nuclear waste, the spent rods that have to be disposed of, in addition to the risk of when Mother Nature decides to split the power plant in half, is what's going on in Japan, of the dangers of it, unless there's a way that they can totally physically isolate the containment vessel so just basically can be shut down, isolated, and easily transported, I would think.
Well, they're getting much, much closer to that than they were. The nuclear power plant in Japan is actually old, and it is not as up-to-date as some of them are now. But still, no matter what, you do have a nuclear waste, and you do have to concern yourself with the fact. See, there's two things about nuclear power. It is not a sustainable source. We will run out of nuclear-provided sources somewhere along the line. It may be thousands of years, so it's sort of a moot point, but it is not a sustainable thing. Electrical power out of the sea, out of the sun, out of wind, those are you can count on them forever, but they're not as reliable because the wind doesn't always blow, the sun doesn't always shine, the water pretty much always flows, but it sometimes more and sometimes less. The thing we've got to do is build this grid, and that's what they're working on now. And I think that's where we're going to be spending all of our money at this particular point, is building a grid so that all this can be fed into this grid. And in New Jersey, when the sun goes down, the wind power from Arkansas will supply the electricity or something like that. So it's all connected together and will flow where it needs to be at the time that it needs to be there. But we haven't gotten that. If you remember, not too long ago, we had a blackout in the New York area over on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And that's because we didn't have a grid. Our grid was a bunch of little grids all over the place, and they weren't necessarily combined or anything else. And so back then, when we realized that we could have major problems and had to do something about them, is when we actually started building this grid. And so we've gotten a long ways with it, but there's still a long ways to go, and it's going to be quite expensive. But basically, I don't know that we're here to try to worry about expense. We're here more to try to worry about covering.
How, powering our telephones and our computers and our electrical-based way of living here in America.
Well,
you know, I wanted to jump in and say that after 9/11 in 2001, the brand new Department of Homeland Security identified America's patchwork, as you were talking about, Cliff, patchwork of electrical grids across the country as a real weakness for America in terms of either a domestic or another terrorist attack that would cripple this country.
And speaking of phones, I'd like to welcome a caller on the line from area code 209. Can I have your first name, please, and welcome to the show.
Hi, it's Juanita. I'm traveling, and I have my cell phone, so I keep losing the connection. But anyway, I may have missed this part, or I don't know, because I lost the call. But anyway, I've always thought the wind power and solar power was the way to go, too. But when I discussed it with a friend of mine who's an engineer, he says, yeah, they're a nice way to go. But the problem with that is the batteries. You got to have the batteries to store the power. And these batteries don't last forever. And when they do got it, when they got to go, they become a problem as far as disposal as well. I don't know if you covered that because, like I said, I missed part of the show. But I just wanted to ask that question so I'd know the answer.
Well, basically, the batteries are not an answer. People have talked about batteries, and of course, batteries will get better. I sure hope they will, anyway. But at this particular point, that's the idea of having this grid is so that the electricity can be generated and used immediately, because batteries really are not an answer at this particular point. I know for years and years and years, up in the Goldendale area here in the Northwest, they've been working on wind power. Years ago, I went up there and talked to the University of Washington, and they were building generators. And the reason they were doing it there is because they have the Columbia River with all the dams on the Columbia River. The dams on the Columbia River are considered their storage area. So if they can add electricity to the grid from the windmills, then they don't have to use the water, and they can store the water, and that the water can be used when the windmills are not operating at full efficiency. And, of course, there, interestingly enough, right on in that area, the wind always blows. It just always blows. They've got thousands of windmills up there now. They've got huge, big windmill farms up there now taking advantage of that fact, and they're still building more and more and more of them as we speak. And but that's the kind of thing we've got to rely on this grid to fill in. So, like I say, if you can't get solar power in New Jersey at 10 o'clock at night, you can be getting it from the wind power in one of the nearby states that has wind. So it can all just, it would be an automatic type of thing, a computerized thing, so that whatever, wherever the electricity is needed, the grid will supply it. And there's got to be enough, however, on the grid to make sure there's enough to go everywhere. And it becomes a very, very difficult program to put together.
Go ahead, Juanita.
So right now, though, you know, like you said, there are a lot of these wind power farms, and even in California, I've seen quite a few. But so where is that power going now? Is it being stored in a grid? Is it going to a grid, or is it going to some kind of a battery source?
Well, there is no battery source in the United States at this particular point. And yes, it also is all being fed into the grid. Even if you have a windmill at home, you can feed it into the grid and get paid for it. The federal government has said that you can do that. So you can always, and that's going to be another thing too. Individual people are building windmills and different types of things, and they can be turned around and fed into the grid. And believe it or not, when we start getting, there's so much to this, and it's so complicated, I can't hardly even explain how it's being thought of. But even the idea of having electric cars, when you drive with an electric car, a lot of the hybrids are rebuilding the batteries, start charging the batteries in those electric cars all the time. So if you're one of these people who drives in long enough that when you come home your battery is always charged, you can plug it in and feed it in down the grid and make money on it too, and get credits for your electricity. So there's hundreds of different really elaborate schemes of how to run this whole thing. But at this particular point, I really feel that it's going to be a combination of solar and wind and water, hydropower, which is why we here in the Northwest are going to be better off than everybody else. We're going to get it first.
We just sent it to California. So what?
Well, that's only recently. That's because we've got the grid now. Part of the grid is there, and yes, we are. I can remember it wasn't that far back when I first moved to California. When I left, I lived in Tacoma and up in the Washington area, and my electric bill was running at that particular time 1.2 cents per kilowatt hour where I lived. So my electric bill was like $12 a month or something. When I moved to California or Arizona, electricity there was 25 cents a kilowatt hour, and I just about died when I found that out, because that was the highest bill I had, was my electric bill. I was paying $600 a month just for electricity when I lived there. In the summertime, I had to have the air conditioning, because 110 degrees and I don't do well together at all.
So well, if I throw something out there, the thing about wind power, there are some cities and other states that are actually putting a halt to new constructions on wind power until further research has been done due to several issues, one of them being safety and the noise, because the windmills do have a lot of noise to them, but they've also had issues where the blades have actually come off of the windmills and have landed on houses and done a lot of damage. So there, some areas have actually put a stop to further construction until more research is done.
How old was that research? Was that article?
Say again?
How old was that article?
This is 2011.
Oh, really? Because they've actually addressed that, and they've been addressing it for quite some time. The windmills that are commercially available are limited as to how fast they can turn, and they turn slow enough that nothing like that can happen. If the blade fell off, it would probably maybe 5 feet or something like that. That's all it would go, and it would fall to the ground, and that's part of the problem. It's partly for that reason, and also partly because of the fact that these things are big, and they're a lot bigger than you think they are when you're looking down. When you're down on the ground looking up at them, they don't look as big as they are. But they're really, really heavy, and they can't. The bearings are one of the toughest things to produce in these windmills. They keep burning out the bearings. So they do keep the speed down and keep the rotation down so that they don't wear out the bearings as fast, as well as for safety. And there are 25 miles. Regulations for how close buildings and things can be to the windmill if you're a windmill farm. I mean, if you're a commercial producer, if you're sitting at home, you can put it anywhere you want to. But there are regulations about it. So it is important. Getting close to answering any of your questions?
Yeah. As far as on solar power right now, individual homes, they do go into a battery, though, right?
Yeah, they do to a certain extent, but not that much as you think, because batteries, first of all, are very expensive. I have a brother-in-law.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
I have a brother-in-law who lives out in the middle of nowhere and has no electricity other than his own solar, and he has a solar panel, and he has wind as a windmill as well. And he does have batteries on there, but the batteries are very slight. I mean, in the evening, if you want to watch television or listen to the radio, and if there's no wind, you might be able to get an hour or two off of the batteries, but they're pretty minimal. So they really rely on the thing actually working. And his biggest problem is switching between the solar power and the wind power, because at night you have to go strictly by the wind power, and during the day you can switch on the solar panels and do more. So there's certain times he can cook when there's lots of sun. He can bake things, and otherwise he can't, you know. So
yeah, my friend lives in an area like that, and he has a log cabin home. It's not in Oregon. It's in California. And it's the same deal. He's way out there where there is no electricity. He has solar, runs off of solar. And she said the batteries was the most expensive part of her solar system. But I guess I don't know how many batteries she has, but hers powers her home pretty well through the night.
Yeah.
But she lives, you know, where they have to use a snow cat to get to their home in the wintertime. There's no road.
Yeah. So of course, at night, the most homes don't use as much power either, so.
Well, that's true. Basically, television.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, probably when you compare the cost of... Now, do they have electricity going up to from the grid at all?
No. My family does. They're off the grid.
Anika, does it... The family you're talking about, are they connected to the grid at all for backup?
No, not at all.
So it's probably cheaper in the long run for them to do the alternative power than it would be to have the power company run the grid up to them.
Oh, in certain places, it's not a matter of cheap. It's a matter of power company won't do it.
Right.
Real simple. I know we had a radio station transmitter that was up on the top of a hill, and there was just no way to get power to it. The power company, under no circumstances, under no price, would do it. So they actually bought two huge diesel generators and took them up there with a big helicopters and installed them. And they had these two generators running the transmitters all the time. So it was really quite expensive to operate that radio station. I guess that was like 22 years ago, and I guess recently they've gotten electricity up there now. But it took them a long time to do it. And it just wasn't an option. And so regardless of the cost.
And I was going to comment, that's why we have such a patchwork electrical grid in the country, is because when electricity was first being rolled out as a new technology, it went to the cities first because that's where you could get your greatest return on the investment. And these rural communities were still living in, you know, 18th and 19th century conditions, and with fires and oil lamps and things like that. And that's how the whole electrical co-op system grew up in rural America. And that's how we ended up getting this patchwork of grids that is looking to be replaced with one that is a lot more integrated for the future.
Yeah, I actually, believe it or not, when I was in high school, I lived out on a farm, and we had our own generators, and we had no electrical grid, so to speak. We used oil lamps and gas and things like that. Our refrigerators and stoves and things were all run on natural gas. Actually, it was propane rather. It was the gas itself was brought in big bottles. We had this giant tank out in the front yard that had gas delivered to it. So it was quite interesting. We also had the interesting thing. We had a stream that went through our property. And we put a generator, a water wheel type generator on that. And so most of the year we actually got our power for free, so to speak, other than maintaining the generators. And the rest of the time we had a four-cylinder engine that jumped in and started up whenever there needed more power than we had. But we had batteries, but we only had two 24-volt batteries. And if we were to run anything other than a 60-watt light bulb, our batteries would last a grand total of about 40 minutes, and that was it.
Oh,
I could just see in Lane County all types of permit problems. Anyways, we lost our caller, but Winika, thank you for calling, and hope you can at least dial back in and listen.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Anybody else, anything going on? I'd love to hear about anybody have any ideas. What is anybody's opinion about whether we're actually going to be able to build any more nuclear power plants in the United States or not? Because this Japanese crisis is basically going to affect us, I believe, long-term. Nuclear plants are being shut down or curtailed right now, not being built.
Go ahead, Cliff.
Germany, I think, is getting rid of three of them right away. We're talking about shutting down like 12 of them or something like that. And it's all just talk at the moment, so there's nothing specific that I can say, but it's all bad. None of it's good. unfortunately. It's bad for people who want nuclear power. Now, what did you have to say there?
Well, I was just going to chime in that at the time that Japan built its Fukushima Daiichi plant, they designed it so that it could withstand a powerful earthquake, and it was also able to resist a tsunami, but it wasn't designed to cope with an earthquake and a tsunami at the same time. And I think that is going to be the biggest challenge of moving forward with the nuclear energy industry, is being able to design for any possible combinations of disasters occurring simultaneously. How do you do that?
Well, see, that's the question. I mean, you can design your head off, and you're not going to be able to come up with every possible combination of disasters that Mother Nature could throw at us, for God's sake. Because, you know, a 9-point disaster earthquake is, I mean, where have you ever heard of a 9-point earthquake? I mean, what was the San Francisco thing? That was only, what, 7.5 or something like that? I mean, 9-point earthquake, that's huge. It's just much bigger than anybody ever. And then to follow it almost immediately, just a matter of minutes away, with a gargantuan tsunami, who would ever think? And
well, what causes tsunamis? Hello? Earthquakes.
Well,
gee, yeah. That was really hard to put two and two together.
That's true, but look at the last one, the 6-point something that happened elsewhere and generated nothing. Sometimes it does. I mean, the tsunami is there, but whether it comes on shore and does great damage or not is another story. They may go the other direction and do something else. In this particular case, it sort of combination of gathered itself and decided where it could do the worst damage, and that's where it went, I think. I mean, giving it a mind of its own, but that seemed to be what took place there, because that's scary, and you don't know. I mean, look at us here on the West Coast, especially. We've been waiting for California to drop off into the ocean for how many years? And this could be the one thing that does it. The big earthquake in California could just drop the whole thing off. I know when I lived in Needles, we often talked about waterfront property when this happened without having to move. And you know, we were joking about it, but we may not be. You never know. And we're living on a fault right here in the Northwest that could do almost the same thing. The plates under
Cascadia subduction zone has not flipped in over 200 years, and it's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
Yeah, and are we due?
And what happens to all of our hydroelectric dams and flood control dams in Oregon? Where are they going to be able to withstand, or are we going to have our own little disaster on this side of the Pacific?
Well, Japan is the most advanced country as far as nuclear power goes. And if it's not going to be safe there, it's not going to be safe anywhere. That's my thoughts on
it. Good point.
Well, I sort of go along with that. I think France is actually the most advanced. They've actually got more of their power being delivered by percentage-wise by nuclear power than anybody else, but that they're small and they don't have as much power necessity, but they do have a lot of that's why I thought they would be the largest producer of nuclear power, but they aren't, because they're small enough, they only have a few, but percentage-wise of what they use, they use more nuclear power than anyone else. They are also concerned. They're looking into what's going on, and they're checking all of their power plants and everything. They are, most of their stuff is very new and very up to date, and I understand extremely efficient, and they use about a quarter as much nuclear materials to produce this same amount of electricity as almost everybody else does, or we do. The rest of the world is still catching up, and that particular plant in Japan was not one of their most efficient ones. It wasn't one of their newest ones. But on the same token, we've got stuff that's much older than that, and now they're talking about anything that's much older than that being turned off. And the thing is, can you turn off nuclear power? I mean, you can turn off the power plant, you can turn off the generating part of it, but the nuclear part is still there, and you still got to find something to do with it. So is it really logical to shut it off? Why not
And then you have to ship it to a place like the Hanford Nuclear Reservation that essentially renders a portion of the country uninhabitable for generations.
Yeah, and they've been doing it for generations. I'm from that area. I mean, that in the state of Washington, that's where I used to live. And they've been talking about Hanford for as long as I've been alive. I can remember when I was a little kid, everybody talking about Hanford. And of course, in Hanford in 1943, and back in those days, that's when they were still where they were actually just Hanford was a part of inventing nuclear power, I guess, if you want to call it that. Or discovering it or something. Harnessing it, I guess, is what
harnessing, that's a good word.
And speaking of harnessing, 34 minutes left in the program, 646-721-9887. Just a reminder that the chat room is open if you'd like to join us there. And a question from the emails. Do you think that the U.S. will shut down our existing nuclear plants?
Like I was saying, there are plans in the works for shutting down some of them. I don't think we're going to get rid of all of them, because there are some that they have determined or are in the process of determining are in areas where the chances of earthquakes or tsunamis are so minimal that they don't mind, and they're not going to worry about it. Of course, you never say never when it comes to the wind around you, so to speak. You just don't know what's going to happen. You just have no idea what's going to take place. But there are nuclear power plants in parts of the country where we just don't have tsunamis. I mean, you can't be a tsunami if there's no water. And I suppose there could be, but in some areas you'd have to go hundreds of miles over land in order to get the water there. And there are places that there are power plants that are not on nuclear, are on faults, on fault lines or tectonic plates that are moving. So there are some that are considered more safe than others.
Well, I guess one of the questions would be is how would you personally feel, and I'll bring this up to the panel, how would you personally feel about living, say, within a 10-mile radius of a nuclear power plant?
I'll pass.
we almost do. I mean, if you want to look at it that way. Of course, the nuclear power plant in Oregon has been shut down and has been shut down for quite a while. It is still there, by the way. They've moved the actual radioactive material and buried that.
The cooling tower is still there.
All the buildings and everything are still there. They can't get rid of them. Nobody wants to. It's not in a great place to begin with for trying to build things or do things. And you're talking about a huge amount of money that they've got to get out of it. So it's just been sitting idle and sitting there for a long, long time. And
it's right on the Columbia River. And it's right on the Cascadia subduction zone.
Well, see, now being right on the Columbia River, and in some cases that's a great benefit because you do have facilities to get product, I guess you would say, up and down the river and to get it out of wherever. I just don't know what they would do with it. What would you?
Yeah, and if it falls in the river, then you just now polluted a major water source for dozens of Northwest communities.
Well, that depends on what you're manufacturing. I mean, you could be manufacturing something that is no, I don't. I mean, if you manufactured radios, you probably wouldn't lose thousands of them in the river. I would hope not, anyway.
Oh, I thought you were talking about material to supply the nuclear power plant and moving the spent rods upstream to Hanford. Was part of the arguments for shutting down the Trojan nuclear power plant in the 80s, which was done successfully.
Yeah, but that's all done now. They're trying to sell all of its parts to someone to try to recoup some of the money that they spent on that. You know, they didn't recoup any of the money on Whoops in Washington when they closed that down. That was such a big fiasco.
And it was so appropriately the acronym.
Yeah.
We didn't think this through.
Yeah.
And speaking of what some people don't realize is a thing called an open pit reactor, which is sometimes located at colleges and universities.
For their nuclear power research stuff.
Correct.
Also, how many nuclear powered submarines have we got running around, and ships in the military have we got running around? I mean, it's not something that we don't use. We use it a lot, and we just don't talk about it. You know, we've got a nuclear-powered ship sitting off the coast of Libya right now helping out. So if somebody, you know, bombs that, what happens to that nuclear power, to that nuclear material, radioactive material? I mean...
And we also have trains that are moving through the country all the time that have nuclear rods or nuclear material that are being shipped to a secure storage facility. Any kind of rail mishap could impact communities far away from where that has been generated.
We do need to separate nuclear power from nuclear waste. Because if you the stuff that you see on trains and stuff like that is actually nuclear waste that's provided by or supplied from hospitals and things like that. There's a huge amount of nuclear waste that's being transported around. But if you take a look at it, you're going to find that it's actually very, very low-grade stuff. I lived in Needles when I lived there. They were building a low-grade waste place for that kind of stuff, and we learned an awful lot about it for a couple of years. There were people in there showing us about it and telling us about it, and then when they built it, we went out and looked at it and all that sort of thing. And it's really quite interesting because when you talk about low-grade nuclear waste, you're talking about a very safe situation. They dig a big hole, and the first thing they did is they looked for a place in the country where the water didn't—you know what water percolating means? That means it never—the water from the top of the rain and such things never gets down to the water level, to the water base and underneath. It just never gets that far.
Aquifer.
Well, sort of, yeah, if you want to call it that in the desert. but anyway, they found a place like that, and it was near Needles, and they dug this place up, and they made this waste area. And when they got it done, they took us out there and showed us with the Geiger counter that there was actually less nuclear radiation coming from that whole place. If you walked 10 or 12 miles in any direction, the desert itself was giving off naturally more nuclear radiation than the waste place did. So they do have a way of taking care of it and making sure it's not going to go anywhere. And the biggest part of it is, of course, the water, because you can't have water going through it and then tainting the entire water supply for who knows how many people. And so by the fact that the water is so far down and if it rains, no matter how hard it rains in the desert out there, the water from the rain or from wherever never goes through and never gets to the water base below. So consequently, they're very, very careful. And nowadays, we do spend a lot of time worrying about things like that.
So do you think the U.S. should continue its putting up more nuclear reactors?
One and out, yeah.
Are we ours? And, or do you think that we should spend it?
I have probably changed my mind. I think we need to spend our time doing something that's safe, that we know is safe, that's going to be safe, and that's we need to spend our time. My opinion right now is that we need to spend our time on the grid, because that's going to cost a lot of money and take a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of thought to put it together. But at least when we do that, when we're through, we have something we can use. If we go building more nuclear power plants, when we get through, we may have something we can't use. We may have something we have to shut down later on. Or we know we're going to have to shut it down sooner or later, because nuclear material is not forever. It does go away, and it will go away. So we may as well plan and do and build something that's going to last, and in this case could last forever, because we're always going to have wind, we're always going to have sun, and those are about
the water.
And water. Well, you know, and there are other places. For example, there's one country, the Netherlands, or someplace that uses geothermal power. They have steam coming out of the ground, and they heat whole cities with this stuff.
Klamath Falls in Oregon here sits on top of one of those thermal energy.
And are they harnessing it?
They are. In fact, one of my best buddies from my county commissioner days was the technology specialist for the Oregon Economic Development Department. When he left, he moved to Klamath Falls because he wanted to tap into that, because he felt that that was really a safe future for energy, to keep his energy costs down.
I've often thought we should tap into these, like the volcanoes. I mean, we have volcanoes all over the place that are technically active volcanoes or inactive volcanoes, but could very easily be, including Mount Rainier, which is one huge volcano. And
yeah.
If we could get down far enough to the heat part of it, why couldn't we harness that? I don't know.
But the question comes again is that what happens when things go out of control? Because it's a lot of power that once it gets away from you, you can't stop it.
And that's exactly right, Robin. That's what I wanted to say, is that the reason that I have no faith in moving ahead with nuclear energy is because in order to try and stop a meltdown, you have to literally send people into high levels of radiation that will kill them. And it's just like the same foot soldiers in World War One that were on the front lines. I mean, you just keep throwing people's lives at it and trying to stop it from being worse. That's what's happening in Japan now. And that kind of power, I don't think we're ready. We've never fully harnessed it, and I don't think it's meant to be that we ever will.
Well, I agree with you. And speaking of, you know, we're closing down and disabling hydroelectric dams, taking that off the grid. And the thing about the dams, yeah, I mean, there might be some fish involved that may get injured or something like that. But if a dam fails, I mean, tragedy is tragedy, no matter how you look at it. I don't want to minimize it, but all you lose is an area. You know, if a electric or nuclear power fails, well, you know, we're already detecting minute amount of radiation from Japan. So the effects of a malfunction can be global, where I guess what I'm trying to say is that hydroelectric, which is abundant, especially with good snowfalls, any disaster is more localized.
And I debate whether or not we actually are seeing radiation from Japan. We're seeing it in the air, but nobody has been able to prove to my satisfaction that it's actually from Japan and not just stuff that's here already, because I think we're taking tests and testing the air much more drastically than we were before, and consequently finding stuff that we didn't see before, and we're blaming it on that. I'm not sure that it is from there. But on the same token, I agree with you. You can't guarantee anything with nuclear power. Just cannot guarantee anything with nuclear power. Anything could happen. Anything. And so, the old saying, better be safe than sorry.
Safe than sorry, yeah. Well, I want you to know that since yesterday, when the Japanese government upped the severity level of the Fukushima disaster to equal the severity of Chernobyl, CBS released a poll showing that only 43% of Americans would support building a new power plant in America, and that's down from 58% support just 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I was just going to finish here.
It's about the same level of negativity as it was in America right after Three Mile Island.
Yeah. And every time something like this happens, because people have been afraid of nuclear power all along, and I have always maintained to this point that there was sort of silly to be that afraid of it. But now I've decided to change my mind, as I've been known to do at times. Because you can't control it. You can't control, and you don't know what it's going to do.
That's
and
right.
So on the fact of there are now alternatives, 20 years ago, there wasn't really considered an alternative. But now there are definitely alternatives, and we're seeing them being built. I know somebody's going to get rich on this, because we got people building wind farms all over the place, and we've got people that are working with solar. When I lived in Needles, driving back and forth, there were four solar plants that were in experimentation. And there's all kinds of different ways to harness the solar power, and it's all safe. All of it's – well, there's one that was a little less than safe. They had this big tower and this big barrel, so to speak, on top of this tower, and they were focusing the sunlight on that tower, and heating up this big barrel until it boiled. And, you know, the possibility of that exploding was there always. But that still, again, was only going to destroy the plant around it. I mean, it was not going to destroy whole cities and communities and states and countries. So it's still safer, a lot safer than the nuclear power. And I do believe at this particular point, we do have to worry about that because you just can't tell. Right now, what did we find out? They were dumping radioactive water back into the ocean, for God's sakes.
Yes, and the fish, and that the Japanese people have a diet that's predominated by fish. And now they're polluting the waters off their country. And, you know, it's just one, it's one of those chain reaction disasters that's continuing to get worse and worse for them.
Exactly. And it's not going to get better. And so I do believe that there and everywhere else, because this is a global thing that people are talking about getting rid of the nuclear power plants. Almost every country is debating the fact, and two or three countries are actually shutting stuff down, Germany being the one that I know the most about. But there are different countries that are shutting things down at this particular point. So if this fusion power thing is real, somebody better get on off their duff and start doing something with it, because that could revolutionize the whole thing. And it's I just don't believe it's real, because
and like Star Trek, it might be real till the 24th century.
Well, I'm sure.
That's what propels the Enterprise into one adventure after another.
Well, speaking of I think warp drive is different than that.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of propel, 18 minutes left in the program. Still time to give us a call, 646-721-9887. Be brave like Juanica, who is a regular caller to the show, by the way, and live to tell about it. So if you have an input, good or bad or whatever, give us a call, 646-721-9887, or send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. I'll read your emails on the air. Or join us in the chat room. 18 minutes left in the program.
So basically, we have determined that I think the day of nuclear power is over. I really believe it is. A lot of people in the United States are heaving a sigh of relief right now because of that. But we do need to come up with something different. And in oncoming weeks, I don't, by the way, Cindy, think too much about, you know, 200 years from now, because in 200 years from now, everything is going to change radically. This just as it always has. And so who knows what's going to be happening in 200 years from now. Maybe we will have warp drives and be able to do. What do they use in warp drives? I can't remember what it's called. But they still have a problem with warp drives because they explode. And so we've got to be careful with warp drives when we get them, too.
Yeah.
But I do believe things will change radically. We need to do something that gets us onto a road of where we can go right now. And right now, there are two things we've got to consider. One of the things we've got to consider is $4 a gallon gasoline, which has nothing to do, by the way, with the nuclear problem. I'm absolutely positive of that. The $4, and I think we may have $5 a gallon of gasoline by
the.
We've
been predicting that for months, for this summer.
I know. Everybody said no when I talked about it last year, but it's going to happen, and it's happening quite a lot quicker than everybody expected, I think. So that's one of the things we've got to worry about, and that can be solved by renewable resources such as algae or switchgrass.
Hydrogen?
Hydrogen is not a renewable resource. I mean, it's close.
It's water.
But it takes huge amounts of electricity to make it.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Okay, I got a solution for you. One of the biggest threats to global warming is cows. There's energy for you. You can fill in the blanks on how to harness it.
Well, I suppose we could go out and raise 1,000 cows, put them on a wheel and have them generate electricity.
Well,
and that's not what you were talking about. I know, but it is a way.
I know. Keep it clean. Keep it clean.
Regardless of whether we build another nuclear power plant and decommission all the ones that are currently operating, we still have generated in the last in the last 50 years, 60 years, we have generated enough nuclear waste that we have just, we've got a major problem on how to get rid of it. And I remember taking my video camera here in Cottage Grove down to the city park just for fun. And I was just interviewing people about the future and said, you know, we've got a lot of nuclear waste in this country. Where do you think we should put it? And one high schooler, I thought, had an entry. He said, we ought to put it in a rocket and send it to the moon because there's no people that are living there. And so maybe that can be something that that we as a country should be reinvesting in, is ways to transport a lot of this nuclear waste that is so harmful to human and aquatic and terrestrial life, and put it someplace on the moon.
Well, I can think of a couple of reasons why that wouldn't be a good idea. One of them is if something happened in transporting it between here and any type of celestial body, it could be totally devastating. Secondly, just as the sci-fi TV show Space 1999 pointed out, but in a way it's a good reality, if you have, say, a nuclear stockpile on the moon and something does happen, I don't know how much energy it would take, because I'm not a physicist. I flunked that on my community college exam. That it would take to actually knock the moon out of orbit or change its orbit, which would have a drastic effect on the Earth.
That's what I would worry about, because once you got it up there, you're no longer controlling it. And if it gets out of control and were to decide, if you put enough of it up there and it were to decide to explode, what if it knocks the moon off of its axis or knocks it out of orbit? You knock the moon out of orbit and you probably destroyed the Earth.
Well, the third point on that is that, as they said, whoever controls the space, you know, like even if just having, well, even our space lab up there.
International Space Station.
Exactly. Can actually rule the world in a sense, because if they tried to, it'd be really easy for them to rain an attack on the planet than it would be for us to retaliate.
Right, right. And of course, this sort of gets into one of the things I wanted to talk about in this hour, and we're running out of hour, but I wanted to bring up this geoengineering thing, this idea of tweaking the Earth's climate by dimming the skies. They're going to actually literally put up something in the atmosphere that cuts down the amount of energy we get from the sun and cools us off, supposedly to take care of global warming. What do you think of that idea? That's, to me, that's got to be the most absurd possible idea that anybody has ever come up with. But these people are serious about this. It's people in England that are really quite serious about the global warming thing. They think we can fix it. I doubt if we can. But can you imagine what would happen if they literally do cool the Earth off? You want to talk about major changes, killing off all the marine life, etc. I mean, this could be total disaster for us if they actually get away to doing anything with it. We're playing Russian roulette with everybody's life in the world. I think this is just a colossally stupid idea myself.
Well, then they'd probably take it if the U.S. did it, they'd take it a step further and have what's called a sun tax.
Well, they can count on governments. If there's a way to tax something, it's going to happen.
Well, they always said that, if they could figure out a way to tax the air, that they would. Then they came up with a thing called carbon tax, and so that they finally managed to tax the air, so to speak.
Okay, the carbon tax, is that what they're putting in place of the gas tax?
No, carbon tax is, I can't remember what country it was, but they wanted to charge the parents so much money on how much carbon usage that a child would have in one day, I mean in their lifetime. Sorry, I'm doing two things at once here. The carbon tax is, everything produces carbon, and the government wants to tax you on it, and it's part of the global warming scenario.
Well, coincidentally, I was just going to jump in here. Last night in Cottage Grove, we had the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality conduct a public hearing on the construction phase of a hydroelectric dam that is being put in to one of the two dams that we have in our area on Dorena Lake. And in the course of that discussion, we were talking about how this particular company, Symbiotics, has worked with the Army Corps of Engineers to retrofit all of these flood control dams that were put in this area in the 30s and 40s so that they can generate hydroelectricity. And because it's already been approved, it is going to happen. I mean, it has been a 10-year-long process, literally. I was county commissioner in 2001 when this representative who was there last night came in to first say, hey, we want to put a hydroelectric project on Dorena Dam. And now they're getting all the way to the end of this, and it's only going to generate like 5 megawatts of energy to power a couple of thousand homes that's going to go into an underground transmission line and down to where the power station is next to Walmart. And it's taken them 10 years and I don't know how much money for them to be able to get this process through. And it's a hydro project. And the biggest concern was because we had the old gold mines that were mining mercury back in the late 19th and early 20th century, is a lot of that mercury has been washing out of the Cascades and has settled now at the bottom of the reservoir. And by constructing and digging up all of that sediment, are we going to resuspend mercury particles downstream where all the different cities in the Willamette Valley take their drinking water from? The other concern had to do with fish passage, and that because when the dams went in, we no longer saw salmon runs into the upper reaches of the Willamette. They were saying that they did not put in a fish ladder for this project, and they just used a certain turbine that would allow more fish to pass through than the spillway and tail race of the current dam. And so it was, you know, it was a two-hour hearing last night, but it was interesting for me to see that here I am in 2011, and it was 2001 when I first met this fellow, and he's still actively trying to make this project work. The testimony was, with all of the siloed government bureaucracies at the federal and the state level that have to be consulted to make these hydro projects happen to generate a small amount of electricity because it uses the run of the river and it doesn't displace any of the water other than what's already coming out of the reservoir. So I just wanted to throw that out, that it takes whatever new energy technique we're going to be using, the government regulation of that is going to be phenomenal.
Well, did they present any figures on whether this is financially feasible or not? I mean, are they going to spend more money than they'll ever make?
Well, that was what at least one fellow said, is, you know, you guys are doing the best job that you can, and, you know, I hope that you're able to make some money on this. But because they have partnered with the Corps and because they've been doing this on Army Corps flood dams around the country, cumulatively, the company's doing just fine, and they're willing to invest and send, you know, and take this long process, because once it's in, it's going to generate electricity and it's going to make them some money.
Well, see, I personally feel, and I don't know exactly all the details of this, but I'm all for it, because we are getting to the point that we're going to be using more electricity than we have, and every little bit can help. And if we use every bit of water, that's the most reliable generating source that there is. And so if we can get more and more of those, I see no reason why not to use them. As long as they can pay for themselves. I mean, we can't spend huge amounts of money because the United States government is at a point right now, we can't spend any more huge amounts of money, folks. So we've got to find some way to stop spending and
watch them.
What?
Watch them. they can spend more money. They have no trouble.
Watch them.
That's why they want to raise the debt. But anyway, 5 minutes remaining in the show, 646-721-9887.
I just want to piggyback on Cliff's comment about how we're using increasing amounts of electricity. On Wheel Dryer Hill here, my in-laws bought this property in the late 30s, early 40s. And the little one-bedroom cottage that my husband and I spent most of our life in, when it was built in the late 40s, there were, I think there were like three outlets, electrical outlets, one in the kitchen, one in the living room, one in the bedroom, and none in the bathroom. And so one of the things we had to do was to rewire the house in order for us to move into it, because we simply were blowing circuits and we had to upgrade the box and everything. Same for the main house here, is that there's never been enough electrical outlets. And I think that's only going to increase in the future.
Absolutely. We're going to start using electric cars. To think of the huge drain on electricity that electric cars are going to make, because that's what we're going to end up with. Ultimately, is electric cars. There's no way around it. We may have natural gas fill in at a period of time, but it's ultimately going end up electric. Everything is going to be electric, and the huge amount of electricity that we're going to need, we've got to start thinking about supplying right now. That's why we're building the windmill farms. That's why we're building the solar farms. That's why we've got all these dams, and if we can build more dams, because literally we have been running out of dams. I mean, we've been running out of water to run through dams, and so if we can find little bits here and there, especially since it's out there in the middle of nowhere, and you say it can supply a couple thousand homes, well, that could be miles and miles and miles of people that live out in the country and could have electricity at a fairly reasonable price, probably. So I think it's definitely a win-win operation if it's feasibly possible to make money on it. And if it's possible to make money on it, somebody will. That's my whole hope for life and liberty, because people are greedy. And thank God, because we get a lot of things because of people are greedy. We really do. People
necessity
come up.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
There you go. And money is a necessity to a lot of people.
I'm going to be greedy here by mentioning that we have just under 3 minutes left in the show. And Cindy, you had something you wanted to share with us at the end?
Oh, I do, but let me make one more comment on this hydro project here in the southern Willamette Valley area. And that is the Emerald People Utility District was the original partner for this. And for whatever reason, they decided it wasn't penciling out in their long-range financial forecast. So they sold their interest to Pacific Power and Light. So I'm not sure. I got to do some more digging on that, because that's what my Cresswell South Lane County Currents column is going to be about this week. But EPUD, when they inherited Pacific Core's territory that is kind of a donut around the incorporated cities, between that and where the co-ops, like Lane Electric Co-op, pick up, that is where their territory is, that was carved out in the 1980s through state legislative action. And EPUD said that when they inherited that, they had a grid that they were working with that was very substandard for places that were rapidly growing, like the Mohawk Valley north of Springfield. And they were bringing in what they called power cells that were able to boost electrical capacity in rural areas. And they were testing it. And this was, I don't know, this was maybe 15 years ago now, but that might be another solution to look at. But I did want to end the program today on nuclear power with what I heard on television. Is that in 2 years ago, President Obama talked about how deep shore off drilling was a good thing, and then we had the disaster in the Gulf, and then this year he talked about rebranding nuclear power as a green energy, and then we had this Japan. So the very next day after the Japan incident, the wind power people called up and said, don't talk about us next year in your State of the Union address.
Really? Please talk about us, please. Just leave us out of it. I don't blame them. But
have
it
a
is-
great week, y'all.
Absolutely, and it's been a great time. No to nuclear power at this point.
No nuclear power.
And if you see something or hear something in the news that you'd like us to discuss, send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, and we'll be back again, 10 a.m.
Goodbye.
Pacific time, next Wednesday.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.